Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
The best thing about being an NFL football player, it gives you more years to be a kid yourself.
Yeah, I'm thinking of taglines for the Chris Sims Youth Football Camp, where the youths are more mature than the guy who's running the camp.
You can learn a thing or two from those kids. Let me teach you how to swear, kids.
Oh, you know that. I'll teach some kids how to swear and make them grow up in a hurry.
Yes.
What's up? Chris Sims here. Ahmed Farid, my homie's here. We're here. Hey, guess what's today? It's the continuation of the Sims 40 countdown.
Oh, we keep
going.
The
quarterback discussion. We're going to hit on some news, certainly, but we're going to go through about five quarterbacks today. Yep. Got Big Phil on the slate today, finally back in the fold here. So we'll get him. We're going to talk to him about a few things. We got two good discussions with Dad coming up, kind of pertaining to the news around the league right now. And then we got a little news to hit right off the bat here with Gerald McCoy and Todd Gurley. So let's start there, man.
We do. We're ready to get back into the news. But first, I do want to take the weekend. We do a lot of things. You obviously are pouring over information and news. And
not that. Don't make me sound too much important.
You're keeping up to date.
During the season, maybe, when it's the weekend, I'm keeping up to date. But I'm not going crazy at this point.
But also, you're hanging out with your kids. And every once in a while, when you do that, this happens to you. I believe we have footage that you put on Twitter of this happening to you, where you did the cancer egg crack challenge.
Yes, I did. Oh, gosh.
Yo, what's up? I'm here to accept Mike Florio's crack cancer challenge. This is for a great cause. I'm excited to do it. Not really, because I don't like eggs and they're gross. Okay, so I got Philip, I got Charlotte. They're going to crack first. Let's go oldest to youngest. Charlotte, you go first. Oh my gosh, that hurt. I think you gave me a concussion. Come on, do it again. Let's go, man. Oh my gosh, it is disgusting.
Philip didn't want to do it. He was like, I don't
Philip,
know.
Philip like didn't understand, I was like, hey, dude, we got to make this video in like 30 seconds. This is our social media.
He wanted to draw it out.
He wanted to increase the pain. My little girl, as you could see, she was very excited to smash that egg on my head. It hurt a little. But I didn't have much egg on me because it literally flew all over the ground.
I think some got on Philip there. And then you called out. So what you have to do is you were called out by Mike Florio.
Yes,
right?
So Mike
Florio put you up to this. And then you called out. Who did you call out?
I called out my old teammate, Rondae Barber, who I know has gotten wind of the video.
Okay.
He's now big on Twitter. The Buccaneers actually sent him the video. So
they made sure he got it.
They made sure he got it. He said he will be answering shortly, sometime within the next week. Kyle Shanahan's the other one I gave the crack cancer challenge to.
Yeah.
I've heard nothing from him. Straight crickets.
You think he won't do it?
I would think so. He's probably just doesn't want to be associated with me really more than anything. So he's probably just going to avoid me that way.
Yeah.
What happened is I really was like, I don't want to call out any of my coach friends. I thought about it even John Gruden. I went online and I went, oh, wait, there's been some coaches that have done this. I saw McDermott up in Buffalo did it, Ron Rivera. So I was like, okay, the ice has been broken there. I can ask one of these coaches. And I figured I went with, the one I'm better friends with and Kyle, but I haven't heard from him.
He may never do it. Okay.
I don't think it's happening.
We'll
it doesn't sound like.
If he does, we'll put it on the podcast. We'll show it multiple times, like we did with Chris, too. What else happened? Jeopardy James lost.
Oh,
big
news.
Lost.
I know.
33rd show. He's out.
How do they do that? How the fuck do you put the show on in some markets in the morning?
Oh, yeah. It leaked
ruin
everywhere.
For everybody
right.
else.
I don't
understand that. That's the one that's weird to me.
I didn't get that either. But I do love how people are saying, he's changed the game. His strategies have really. The dude just knew. more than everyone
right.
else. He got 90% of the questions correct.
Right. He was
so
amazing that
way. That
was
his strategy,
smart
was
as hell.
To know
yes.
the answers better than everyone else.
Went reverse order, as I understand
he
it. Right?
He
started
pot,
at the bottom.
Because you know, he knew more. And
his
so if you know more, you want to build the pot as quick as you can.
Yeah.
It's a luxury. If you go on that and do the same strategy
right.
I do, we don't win.
I'm kind of disappointed I never watched it. I know a lot of people talking about, like, oh, he's going to work for an NFL team on analytics and all that. I again, it sounds good, and I believe this guy is incredibly intelligent. I know he gambles a lot on the NFL.
He does.
If I was going to have him on my analytics team, I'd have to see some results of the betting, too. I'm not just going to go, oh, you're good at Jeopardy. Come in here and run our analytics. No problem.
I think he's pretty smart.
I know he's pretty
he
smart.
He could probably pick it up.
I just want to see, yes, the proof in the pudding as far as it pertaining to sports on a consistent basis. That's all I'm saying.
And I gave up energy drinks and soda. I'm done. I finally am done.
What?
This is day one of
what?
It.
What?
This is day one.
This is day one?
Yeah.
Okay, you don't have to give up soda, but I'm glad about the energy drinks. That's a good, and at least limit the soda.
Okay.
But way to go. Was that because of me?
It was.
It was.
You got on me enough, and every day I was having them, and I was like, you know what? I'm done with them.
Good for
so
you.
I'm drinking, I got water.
Way to
in
go.
Here. And so I feel better already.
Yep.
I'm like 3 hours in. I feel better already.
I peer pressured your ass into that one.
more news that's going on, this pertaining to the NFL, is Gerald McCoy found a team. The Buccaneers moved on from Gerald McCoy. They said, you know, we're going to replace you with Ndamukong Suh and give him your number.
Yeah.
They're like, we totally want to we're going to change his name, too, to Gerald McCoy. I don't know if you heard that. But Gerald McCoy signed with the Panthers. What do you think about that?
Great signing for the Carolina Panthers. Hey, I'm what do they say in the stock market world? I'm bullish on
You're
the Carolina
bullish.
Panthers.
Yeah.
I really am. I mean, I expect the Carolina Panthers.
Even before they signed Gerald McCoy.
I was. I mean, again, you know, we got to take into account last year they were 6-2. That's right around the time Cam Newton started to have the shoulder problems. They had a few bad losses. That I'm certainly not going to take the blame away from them, but the shoulder was an issue too, and they kind of fell apart at the end of the season. I do think they're set up to be really good. First thing I look at with the Carolina Panthers, okay, one is go, hey, up front, what does it look like? They got, I think, one of the better offensive lines in football with some of the things they did in the offseason. Defensive line was already good, Ahmed. I mean, they were, it's a big group of big people they have on their defensive line. That's what I love about the Carolina Panthers.
They can rest them a little bit more.
They can rest. They're going to be able to send waves of guys in. I think that's ultimately when I looked at it for Gerald McCoy, just from pure football standpoint, right? The three teams we heard about, the Panthers, the Browns, the Ravens. The Panthers and the Browns, oddly enough, run the same exact defensive system. Steve Wilks came from the Carolina Panthers, went to Arizona to be the head coach. Now he's the defensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns. And then the Baltimore Ravens kind of run like a 3-4 base scheme.
Yeah.
That's not really Gerald McCoy's sweet spot. Right. So I think ultimately he looked at the scheme fit. And I wonder, I mean, we know money played a part in this. He's not going to get paid as much as Ndamukong Suh, which he shouldn't. Suh is better. And Sue at least showed evidence in the big moments last year that he's capable of still really being dominant.
Yeah.
McCoy is really good still. Don't get me wrong. He's disruptive and can have, you know, a lot of good moments. But there were some, you know, very inconsistent moments throughout the year, too. The thing I like that he brings to the Carolina defense, and we talked about their defensive tackles, they're a gigantic group.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, if you just talk about the guys who start, right, with a Kwon Short at his position, he's 315, okay? Dontari Poe is 346. I would throw the challenge flag on that. That's probably after a long diet at 346, okay? Vernon Butler at 330. TJ Barnes at 355. They don't have a defensive tackle that's like that athletic disruptor type like a McCoy is. McCoy about 295. He dances around 300 pounds, right around there.
Sure.
But he is a little more disruptive-based rather than these other guys who are what I would call, you know, pluggers. They plug a lot of holes. They create a mosh pit in the run game. And I think that's the element he can bring to this Carolina Panthers defense.
Interesting. So he's going there, and I was listening to you guys talk, you and Mike talk on PFT. He doesn't get the opportunity to go back to Tampa.
It's crazy.
Because they play that game in London.
Yes.
So he will play him.
He will play him.
Couple times, but not in Tampa, unfortunately.
But he's going to get a play him, and that's I'm sure that was, you know, if there was a tiebreaker, you know, I said this to Mike today, the fact that they gave Sue his old number 93.
Yeah. And he's down, McCoy's downplayed that kind of, it's like, it didn't really affect my decision, whatever, but you feel like as a competitor.
If it was a tiebreaker, let's just say Cleveland and Carolina offered both the same amount of money. Little things like that. Oh, I get to play them twice. Oh, they gave my number away. That could push you over the edge. You go, you know what?
I'll go to Carolina.
Yeah.
It just seems better for me. So I do. I like the Carolina Panthers. Okay. I think Gerald McCoy has still a lot to offer. And because of the depth of the defensive tackle room they already have in Carolina, he's not going to be asked to play 60, 70 snaps right. a game. He's going to be able to play something more manageable for what suits him at this age of his career.
If he hits all of his incentives, he'll make, I think, a little bit more.
Yes, he's got a chance to make Sue's money, right. But I don't. That'll be tough.
Don't anticipate from what it. Especially if they're going to arrest him, in which they probably should do.
Exactly right.
Not play him every snap.
No doubt.
Some other news out there, and this is not very positive with running back of the Rams. That's Todd Gurley. And we really haven't had a whole lot of positive news on Todd Gurley for a long time. The knee issues for him. Saw it last season in the postseason, in the Super Bowl. Just more and more things that come out, Chris, that you have seen that give us pause and make us think, like, man, this is a serious injury for Todd Gurley.
It's just everything that we thought is basically being confirmed here as the offseason goes. I mean, first of all, hey, let's go back to last season. Right, we know he missed some games, missed some time because the knee wasn't good. Then he gets back healthy. Any second he got on the sidelines, he was riding a bike. That's a huge red flag right there.
Right.
When you're riding a bike, that means you're having to keep something warm and move it, and you're constantly having to manage it that way. No, he had the good Dallas Cowboy game, right, in the divisional round. That was good, but I think we all have to realize that the Rams cracked the code on the Dallas defense that day. There was a lot of holes where he just got to run straight through, and it was fine. But, you know, between that, you know, then we hear that, you know, hey, we're going to have to, do damage control and kind of, you know, take care of Gurley's knee all off season and make sure we manage the situation right. You know, so now he's not taking part in any OTA drills. He's not even going to go out and do the individual drills.
So that's the new news.
No individual drills. And then now the new news is that he wanted to lose some weight to take some pressure off of that, let alone Jay Glazer coming out last week, who Jay Glazer is a guy, when he speaks, I listen, because not only does he have connections with teams, Jay is one of the most connected with players in football. So he's going to know guys on the Rams team that have told him things about Gurley's knee. And he said it's a major concern. Let alone they drafted a running back in the third round. Those are all context clues to me to go, ooh, there is some concern, and we're just continually being validated here to where, I think Todd Gurley is going to dance himself here into Calvin Johnsonville, and what I mean by that is Calvin Johnson, his last few years in his career, he couldn't practice. All he did was play on Sunday,
sure.
And that's hard to do, and I feel that's where Todd Gurley might be headed here, you know, if he wants to continue his career the next few years.
And it's too bad. It's so dynamic when he came out, you know, had the knee injury when he first started playing his NFL career. Did your computer just die?
Yeah, it just, like, went dark. It
really?
Just went, like, totally black, and I had an alert on there, and that was the only thing on there. So I'm putting it down. I'm going to see if it opened up, and it comes back onto the screen.
We might need to get IT out here.
Oh, there it is. Woo! Is back.
All
technology. I love technology.
You didn't even need
it's
to
so
shut it
awesome.
Off. You just lower the screen and open it up again.
That's
there
it.
You go.
We used to have a joke up in New England when I was working, you know, up in the scouting department. We had like problems with the computers or something. Like, hey, my computer froze, and you could always guarantee when you called the IT guys and do that, and their Boston accent, they'd always go, "Did you restat your computer?"
Yeah.
We used to love it.
They don't want to do that. They don't want to get up there.
Well, they knew that, like, more times than not, that fixes the problem.
That would work.
Let's start there. And then if we restat a computer and it works, then we're good.
That's what they should do to Todd Gurley. Just sit him down and then open him back up, restart Todd Gurley, and see if that'll fix all of his knee issues. I mean, it's a bummer because he's so good when healthy.
Oh, I mean, yes. In the discussion for best running back in football.
Absolutely. Best player in football. And he single-handedly won me a league 1 year in
fantasy
football.
Right. Well, he led the team in receiving 2 years ago.
I root for him. Yeah.
You know, people forget that. 91 receptions. I mean, not a Todd Gurley running the ball. We know how awesome that is, but
dynamic
to what you're saying. He's a huge part of their offense in the screen game and the pass game. He is one of the best pass catching screen game running backs in the game. And that will hurt that up. I think that's why they drafted the Darrell Henderson, because he's going to be really good at maybe taking some of that workload off of Gurley.
Yeah, so we'll see.
We'll see where it goes.
That.
Yep.
It is time. That's it. That's it for the news, right?
I think that is it. You're right.
We get back into the top 40 quarterback countdown for Chris Sims. So we are all the way through. We've gone through 40 through 33 on this podcast already.
Right.
So here are what we've done already. Tyrod was there at 40. I do have some Twitter comments from people out there.
Please
One does
do.
Include Tyrod Taylor, and it says, you call him a game manager. He thinks that might be because that this is from Tim on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't had the job security and perhaps maybe he doesn't want to lose his job, so he's more of a game manager.
That's a valid point, and I respect the thought there. And especially, I mean, this came from Twitter. I mean, they didn't call me a four-letter word or anything.
It was respectful.
Hey, listen, I think that is a valid point. Hey, when you're not put in that position of power sometimes to go, hey, you're the guy.
Yeah.
It's hard to let it go.
You don't want to make your mistakes.
You don't want to make your mistake. You're trying to save your job instead of just playing the game. So I do understand that, yes. But at some point, it has to change. And he got enough games to try to change that and go, okay, no, I'm not going to manage games. I'm going to push the envelope. I'm going to be the reason we win games instead of I'm trying not to be the guy that loses us the game. There's a difference there, and I think that's what he flirts with a little too much. But a valid point. I appreciate the thought.
Number 36 on your list was RG3.
Yep.
And here's one that's not quite as nice from Twitter. This is more the norm.
I get you. I know one of my unpopular ones.
Big Blue coming for you. He goes, ridiculous. 6 touchdowns, 9 interceptions from 2014 to 2018. When, where has he displayed talent that is there? He's lucky to be on an NFL roster.
Yeah, he's not lucky because he's like got one of the 10 best arms in football, and he's an incredible athlete. And was he an immature douche there for a little while in his career? Definitely. There's no doubt about it. That's why he was out of football for a year.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, his year with the Cleveland Browns, first of all, it was pretty good preseason, and it was good play in the regular season that year. This just in. Those Browns stunk. Yeah. Okay, so it's hard. They could have put Tom Brady out there with those Browns teams, and I don't think the stats would have looked real good. Okay, I'm just trying to make that
point. They probably would have won the Super Bowl, but besides that, you're right. The numbers wouldn't have been there.
But, you know, so I take that into account. Hey, listen, some of this is a little bit projection, sure, but I know that he impressed people in training camp last year. I know in the preseason he was phenomenal last year. And I look at that aspect, and I've liked everything he's said and done off the field, too, to see that, he's matured that way. And, yeah, I believe that he is one of the 40 best quarterbacks in football. And I do think Lamar Jackson, you know, if he does slip up, the Baltimore Ravens are going to be in very good hands with RG3. They really do. I mean, again, he's an elite thrower of the football. And he's not a great as runner as Lamar Jackson, but he can still run. So there's very, very high-end talent there. Yes, the next thing, the next piece of the puzzle is him going to have to go out there and prove it to this point.
Sure.
But, I'm okay with that. Listen, I know RG3 was a lightning rod. Tyrod Taylor, if I had to go back and self-scout myself, I might have messed up on Tyrod Taylor a little bit. You know, as you start to talk these things out
you
a little.
You think you should have moved him
I
up?
I maybe moved him up just a few spots. Okay. I certainly. And I think at some point we're going to have
RG3,
a
Ahead of RG3 at 36?
Maybe. He should have been maybe around that 36, 35 range, I think, if I was going to be honest with that. You know what happens with this, too?
You go too fast.
Well, I talk to myself. Oh. You know, as I start to talk to people and really have the conversations and kind of filter out some of the stuff.
For sure. The more you get into it.
I feel a little bit better. Oh, okay. So, I might have had Tyrod Taylor a few spots too low. I totally get that.
And one more before we get into our next five on the list is your number 35, you had Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
At number 35. And Jonathan Hanna says, is this starter Fitzpatrick or backup Fitzpatrick? Two completely different players. So which one did you have at 35?
Well, I combined them both. That's who it is. Exactly right.
Okay, so separate them. Where would they be on your list? So backup Fitzpatrick, how high would he be on your list?
Well, backup Fitzpatrick.
Where would he go?
Backup Fitzpatrick is usually pretty good. Comes in, saves the day.
Correct.
And he's like the 30th best quarterback in football.
He'd be 30th.
Maybe 29 or 28 maybe. But then starting quarterback has no gauge and like can throw two pick sixes in a row and be like, I'm going to throw another dicey one down the middle. And you go, wham, you've thrown four picks in the first half. What are you doing? Where's your gauge? So it is, and look at this little graphic we got, the Ryan Fitzpatrick cycle. Yeah, I mean, seriously. Get signed as a backup, starter gets hurt, thrown into the game, play very well, earn starting spot, get paid, suck, get released, do it all over again. Yeah. I like that graphic. That's pretty good there. So that's the worry. Ryan Fitzpatrick probably would have been a little bit higher.
Starter Fitzpatrick is not in the top 40.
But no, he's probably a few spots lower. Yeah, I mean, he really is. Well, I can't trust him. That's really one of the reasons ultimately I put him there.
So name him the starter. Just you're the backup.
No,
you will play the first snap, but you're the backup.
Oh, if you're the starter and Ryan Fitzpatrick's your backup, you're fucked. It's over. I'm just telling you. He's
got a
shamrock
the size
of Ireland up his ass, and he is going to get in there at some point.
It just means you got to wait a couple games. Okay, cool. So let's get into it. Number 32, we're on to number 32 in our countdown.
Yep.
All for the first time here on the Unbuttoned Podcast. We have not revealed this list on this podcast.
Yeah.
Number 32 is...
Josh Rosen. Miami Dolphins. Oddly enough, competing with Ryan Fitzpatrick. And if you hear the early reports, it sounds like Ryan Fitzpatrick is outperforming him. Not surprised by that. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick is a 15-year NFL veteran. Josh Rosen's a second year learning his second system, maybe really his third system, because he probably had to learn about two of them last year since they fired their offensive coordinator in Mike McCoy. But hey, Josh Rosen, there's things I like about his game. And, you know, with some of these rookie quarterbacks or now second-year quarterbacks, you know, again, I'd like to see more evidence before I rank them too high. Josh yeah. Rosen's a tough eval because the team around him stunk last year. Now, we're talking about, like, a really pure thrower of the football first off. I mean, perfect spirals every throw. And people out there might be going to go, well, what the hell does a spiral matter? Spiral does matter. Ask any wide receiver. When that ball is coming in pretty and spinning nice, you know, it's just easier for the receivers to just grab it and snag it and rip it down to where you get a wobbler and maybe the point hits your palm and then you drop it or you fumble and bumble with it. Perfect spirals allow the receivers to catch it seamlessly and make plays after the catch. His accuracy is top notch. One of the things that I don't love about him, right, was can he take a beating? Is his frame big enough? I still think that's within question.
Okay.
You know, he is a little bit of a narrow, slender type guy. But one of the positives I had that I wasn't sure about coming out of the draft was movement. Okay. And again, this is not going to be the kind of guy that's going to scramble for 5 and 10 yards consistently. That's never going to happen. But a lot like a Tom Brady, his movement in the pocket was very impressive last year, especially with one of the worst offensive lines in football, if not the worst, in front of him. Got a great sixth sense, Ahmed, about sliding, having a feel for people around him, where to step, where to slide, staying in throwing position. He's a good decision maker, and he's a good deep ball thrower, too. So I like Josh Rosen. I do expect him to become the starting quarterback with the Miami Dolphins. And these are the type of guys where Josh Rosen, I mean, has a good year, shows me a little more evidence of being consistent and being able to run an offense and playing at a high level, they can make remarkable jumps from year two to year three.
So you're right. We just talked about it. A perfect position to be in is to be the backup behind starter Ryan Fitzpatrick, and that's what he's doing early yes. on. The new head coach over there in Miami is Brian Flores.
Right.
You know him very well.
Yep.
He did recently say about Rosen, he's got a lot to learn, no doubt about that. This offense is not an easy one
it's
to
tough,
learn.
Man.
It's the
tough.
New England wide receiver coach, Chad O'Shea.
Yes.
You know him
I
well.
I know Chad, yep.
It seems very complicated.
The New England offense is the hardest offense in football. And it's extremely tough to digest, especially for new players, free agents, anything like that, because it's a language that's unlike any other language in the NFL as far as it comes to offenses. They use numbers as part of the formations a little bit.
Okay.
Zero out slot, one out slot. In the West Coast offense, that would be double wing right, double wing left. And guys have heard that a lot more than they get there and go, what? Zero out slot? One out slot, one hole, one hole.
So why do they do that? Do they just want to prove that they're that much
no,
smarter than
No, it's the system that they've always had. It actually
yeah.
goes back to my dad's days with the Giants. That's
really?
The system they use. So they do that. They combine words, right, Ahmed? So this is different, too, where, you know, you might have a post and a curl
yep.
on the same side of a route, right, on your right side. Say you got two receivers to the right, and it's a post and a curl. They combine it, and they call it a pearl.
I like that.
Right? It
yeah.
makes sense that way.
It does.
You know, so they have a great play down in the red zone that's famous that they kill on. It's, you know, they go, it's gun F right, 72 pearl smash wheel. And, yeah, the pearl is the post and
the curl,
right. And then they have smash game on the opposite side with a wheel from the back out of the backfield. But, yes, he's going to have to do some learning there, and I think he's a smart kid, and he will figure it out. What are you writing down?
Slant, drag, slag.
Slag, you like that? Okay.
Is that a slag?
Yeah, okay.
What's
slag?
The other one? Like a fly and a curl?
Like a
furl?
Well, I'm thinking like two posts. You know what that would be in their offense? Two posts, like two post routes. If you have both receiver, they would call that a topper.
Okay.
Because it's two posts, that's a topper.
Oh, okay. What was that one, Pete?
What about a go and an out? Go and an out.
Gout.
You might see Tom Brady go like
gout.
This.
You got the gout.
You got the gout. Well, they go with Gotti instead. And he might show the gun. Like they're like John Gotti, right? That means the outside guy's going to run a go route. The slot right guy is going to run an option out route, basically. He can sit down in the zone, just sit down and turn. If he gets something inside, then he can break out. The record-breaking touchdown pass to Randy Moss in the 2007 season, that was Gotti on the right side of that play. That was Gotti. The corner jumped the slot out route. Randy Moss was wide open. 50-yard touchdown pass, game-winning touchdown pass.
And it's good because they're connected. It's routes that are connected, right? And they work together in unison. So
it's just a different language, though, as far as the rest of the NFL.
And once you learn it, you're like, okay, cool.
It makes a lot of sense.
Like,
once you learn
it. I get it. I like that. Right. So he was Josh Rosen was the number 10 overall pick 2 years ago. Now he was traded for a second round pick and a fifth round pick. And so his stock was down, even though people knew that he didn't play in a good offense last year. His stock was still down significantly.
Well, that's the area we're in. Oh, you must not be any good because your team doesn't win. I mean, we're going to blame it all on the quarterback. It's always the quarterback.
Did you rank him last year? Do you remember where he was in your top 40?
Yeah, I can't remember exactly where I had him last year. I cannot say I do. I can't remember off the top of my head. I have
guess
to go back
it was
and look.
In the same range, probably.
Probably, maybe a little higher. Down lower, I should say, the properly.
Right.
I don't think I had him in the top 30 last year.
So now he is
It's not an indictment on him that they drafted Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray's special that way. Okay, Josh Rosen, the big thing for me, handled himself really appropriately this offseason with all that Kyler Murray talk.
He did seem to do that because that's been a question for him at times, his personality, how he relates with others. Is he aloof? You've heard that term thrown around with him.
Definitely.
He did seem to handle the whole controversy and trade talk about as well as you could.
He did. Other than unfollowing the Cardinals the night of the draft, everything else was pretty perfect. But I still have faith in this guy at this point of his career. I really do. With the way he throws the ball, the way he moved in the pocket, if he can stay healthy and show me he can take a beating, I think the guy has got a chance to really make a good career for himself.
And now he's in the AFC East with Sam Darnold and Josh Allen, two other quarterbacks that were taken in the first round last year, too.
No, it's unbelievable.
You think he could?
It's the three young guys and Brady and the old goat, the old Billy goat.
32, Josh Rosen, who could go up or down depending on what happens
this year. He has a chance to be a huge riser. Huge riser.
I guess I could say that with every quarterback, they have a chance to go up or down. Number 31 on our list is another backup quarterback who maybe will have a chance to shine. The team doesn't hope he has a chance to shine this year that he plays for.
That's right.
Number 31?
Jacoby Brissett. Indianapolis Colts. I mean, one of the best backups in football. Really, I mean, as you see where I have him ranked, I mean, he's a fringe starter. You know, I think he's got a lot of starting quarterback traits as far as that is concerned. You know, first thing is, you know, being able to play in New England, you know he can pick up offenses, deal with things like that. So the mental aspect's good. To further that conversation, gosh, he got traded to the Indianapolis Colts and was thrusted into being the starting quarterback about 9 days after he got there. You want to talk about tough sledding. And then he did an unbelievable job executing that offense that year with Andrew Luck out. Mm-hmm. But the first thing with Jacoby Brissett, great size, really big, strong guy. And I know people are always going to say, well, what's that got to do with anything? Well, size is a skill. You know, when you're really big like that, you can kind of break arm tackles in the pocket and still throw the ball down the field. You can have people tugging at your shirt or your hips or whatever else, and you can still throw the ball 20 extend yards the down play. The field. Yeah. Right. So he's very good that way. Sorry to mess up your shirt.
So
accurate throw of the football, good arm. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's one of the biggest arms in the football, but can certainly make every throw. He's a great deep ball thrower, throws the ball high, lets the receiver adjust to it. And then the last thing I think about Jacoby Brissett that I really think people sleep on, and people got to go back and watch the highlights of that year. He's a very good athlete. I mean, he really is. Sure. He's a dangerous runner. And really, what should further that too, if anybody remembers the year Brady got suspended for 4 games, Garoppolo played 2, he got hurt. Jacoby Brissett had to play the third and fourth game. The third game when they played him, they basically ran like a quarterback, like almost a Lamar Jackson type of offense, and won the game with him having some quarterback runs and making some easy passes. So that talks to you what kind of athlete he is. But Jacoby Brissett is one of those guys. The Colts, they're smart to have that type of backup. They have a Super Bowl caliber team.
They don't want to get rid of him either.
No.
Chris Ballard, they've asked him
you
about
shouldn't.
That. He says they have to be blown away to get rid of
no
Jacoby
doubt.
Brissett.
When you have that kind of team, why would you risk it? You know, they're a Super Bowl caliber team, like I told you with Andrew Luck. If he got hurt, okay. Yes, maybe that hurts their chances, but I would still go, damn, they're still going to be a pain in the butt. Jacoby Brissett's
still
a good playoff team. Okay. And if he got hot the right way, maybe he could do a Nick Foles type of thing. So I look at that, and I do think that there will be a market for him next year. You know, maybe to be a bridge a bridge gap starter.
This should be his last year. His contract's up after this year.
I would think so.
In Indianapolis.
Yeah, I would think so. You know, and maybe that team that moves on from a quarterback next year and is thinking, oh, we're going to draft him. Maybe you sign a Jacoby Brissett for a 1 or 2 year deal, and maybe he can prove himself to be a worthy starter and then continue to be a starter as his career goes along.
Yeah, the 2017 season with the Colts. I mean, that was not a very good team. They finished 4-11, still threw over 3,000 yards, 13 touchdowns, 59% completion percentage, was sacked an AFC high 52 times.
And yes, so they didn't protect him. That was one of the things that was not good for him that year. But when you don't know an offense and you're confused and you're learning on the fly, when in doubt, you just go, okay, let me just take the sack. I don't know where everybody is. I don't want to throw the ball away and get intentional grounding. I don't want to try to throw the ball away and fumble. So that was probably the worst thing about his year there, is he took too many sacks. But I don't think that would be the case if he was a little more comfortable in the situation.
So your 31 ranked quarterback in your top 40 quarterbacks. His numbers for last year.
Yeah.
He was 2 for 4 with 2 yards passing.
Oh.
And his longest completion was 4 yards.
Ooh.
So he had his longest completion was longer than the total yards he ended up with that year. His first pass was a negative 2 yard pass to Chester Rogers.
Yeah.
So he ended the day with a negative yards pass.
You know, again, we can use all these arguments with all these things. And I know,
for sure.
I mean, on Twitter.
I just thought it was interesting.
No, I hear it. I'm glad you did it because it brings up other things that I can go off of too. Because I know on Twitter, and it's the number one thing, I go, oh, you're taking these guys over Eli Manning. You're taking Ryan Tannehill, over Eli Manning. You're taking Josh Rosen, Jacoby Brissett. Yes, I am. And again, I'm not sitting here trying to be a jerk to Eli Manning. But there's nothing physically he can do as good as they can do. The only thing he has over them is experience. And if you're not willing to throw the ball down the field and be aggressive or take hits in the pocket, experience isn't that great of an advantage. And those are the issues I would worry about right there. So, yeah, I think if you put these quarterbacks on the New York Giants teams the last 2 years, okay, yes, the Giants are every bit as good, if not better, with all of them at quarterback over Eli Manning. So back off with that talk, okay? There is a reason the Giants have gone to the playoffs once in the last 6-7 years. I mean, they've been 2016, since they won the Super Bowl in 2011. They've been 1 year in 2016, and Eli was really average that year. I don't know what anybody's even talking about. I still can't even believe we're having this discussion at times. I really can't. It actually is, for the first time today,
it's frustrating. I feel like it's making you angry.
Today is the first time it's actually frustrating me, because I want to go, what is everybody looking at? What are you looking at? There's worse teams off. There's worse offensive lines in football. There's been plenty of quarterbacks with worse running backs and wide receivers and tight end play in football, but don't seem to get the excuses constantly that Eli Manning gets. It's unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it. Never. And I know I'm not the only one, because I have people all around the NFL who constantly text me going, good for you. I don't get what everybody is in love with Eli. Somebody has to say it eventually. So here I am. I'm saying it.
Number 30 on your list, Eli Manning. What? I can't believe it. No. Yeah. You get it off your chest, though. You're right. I mean, the skill set's there, and obviously what we're going to see from the market next year with Jacoby Brissett will speak to that.
Yes.
He'll have offers.
Sure. Well, he might not get a chance to play again this year, too. So,
right.
We'll see where the market is. And listen, Chris Ballard comes out and makes comments like, I'm not going to trade him, because he's gotten plenty of teams that have called to trade for him. So he's letting everybody know, hey, don't waste your time calling here giving me a third or a fourth round pick. That's not happening.
This might be one of the rare bad Bill Belichick trades and moves. And not like they needed a quarterback every way. I mean, they might not have maximized value.
Well, they had Garoppolo at the time.
They did. So they had
three
of them.
So that's weird, right? They probably were like, man, this might be about as good as a deal we'll ever get for Jacoby Brissett.
They traded Brissett for the wide receiver, the former first round pick,
Philip Dorsett. Brissett or Dorsett.
And it did. And in Dorsett, 32 passes last year. So that might be one of the rare situations where Bill Belichick didn't maximize value, but as you said, they had so many quarterbacks. What are you going to do? You can't play them all. Right. So that is 31 Jacoby Brissett. Number 30 is a quarterback you mentioned in our opening discussion. Number 30 on your list is
Lamar Jackson. Anybody that's been listening to me knows that I've been a huge defender of Lamar Jackson, going back to when Bill Polian came out and said, he's a receiver in the NFL. I thought that was completely disrespectful, okay? Lamar Jackson is certainly worthy of being an NFL starting quarterback, or has the skill set to do that. Great rookie year. I mean, what did he go, 6-1, right?
Yep, he did, as a starter.
I mean, they went on a run there at the end of the year. Now, there's, of course, the athleticism I love. Some of the throws I love. He shows potential to be a special passer at times. I mean, the one thing I love about him is he can just flick his wrist and throw it 45, 50 yards. It's effortless. You know, when people are going across the middle of the field, he's got a great way. He can throw it sidearm and dip down and throw at different angles. You know, natural that way. But yet, there's lots of inconsistencies in his technique and his throwing off of that, too, where I'd go, yes, for every one of those, ooh, that was a cool throw, I could show you two throws to go, everything's perfect here, and he should hit the bullseye, and he didn't hit anything on the bullseye.
He could have kept it simple.
He could have, right.
He didn't.
Right. He made the guy go down, and, you know, here's a game. There's a guy running the out route, and if he throws it on target, it's going to be a 20-yard gain because the guy's going to run after the catch.
Right.
Instead, he's got to go to the ground and catch it, or he doesn't catch it at all because it gets skipped on the ground. So there's major issues with technique and consistency in his throwing. That's my big concern with Lamar Jackson. In fact, I said this today on the show. I don't know if there's really a team Lamar Jackson could have started for last year other than the Baltimore Ravens. Maybe the New England Patriots, because I think they could have figured out a way to run the wildcat type of offense with him as well. But I look at Baltimore as being one of the few scenarios and team that had the talent around him to make the intricate, you know, very creative run scheme where they can dominate people up front because they have a great offensive line and not have to depend on being a 50-50 balanced team of throwing the football either. They're one of the rare teams, if not the only team in football, that I think could have managed that type of situation.
They figured it out last year. They had Marty Morningweg, although he has been replaced by Greg Roman, who is with the team, and he was basically the run game coordinator. And so he was the reason that they were able to do a lot of that stuff. Greg Roman was the offensive coordinator back when I was in the Bay Area for the 49ers, and he coached Colin Kaepernick and some of those high-flying offenses that were pretty equal, you know, running quarterback.
Yes.
And you ran a lot. Sometimes Colin would have more rushing yards than he would have passing yards,
right,
but they would win
That's
by a couple touchdowns.
That's right. I'm not all into here about the passing yards and everything like that. It's not all about that.
But what do you think about the Ravens owner just recently told the season ticket holders, he goes, quote, "I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. Lamar is not going to be running 20 times a game. That's not what the offense is about." And so he is indicating that they kind of want to get away from the Lamar running, you know, 100 yards. He ran over 90 yards like three times last year. Threw over 200 just once last year. So what do you think of that comment?
Well, the first thing I think of is it's always good to hear the owners coaching the team. that's the first thing I honestly think about. But no, in all honesty, he's right. I mean, you can't expect that guy. Lamar Jackson is.
But you shouldn't take that away.
No, they got to still do it. Lamar Jackson has to be good at knowing when to put his body on the line in certain runs. But yeah, to consistently ask him to carry the ball 20 times a game, that's just a little too much. You know, 10 to 15 times a game, okay, that might be manageable.
Right.
But yeah, you're risking a lot by playing that style of football, where we know, hey, the NFL is as physical as it comes. Linebackers, safeties are faster than ever. Defense ends, all of that. And Lamar Jackson, as good as he was at running, you know, hey, it still didn't look like Louisville last year when he was running around because, the talent gap is different. You know, the big thing with Lamar Jackson, just got to continue to see the passing game grow. You know, I just don't, and as much as I like Greg Roman and his creative ways of running the football, all of that, you know, of course, Baltimore's going to be studied this year. Teams are going to look at what they did. You know, everybody in their divisions, of course, going to study them, and they got to play it last year, so they're going to be a little bit prepared. Mm-hmm. You know, just to sit there and think, oh, we're the Baltimore Ravens, and we're going to be, you know, a 70-30 run team. No, there's just no way that they can be good week after week after week and be a playoff team. They have to find a way to keep defenses backed off. Not that they have to be throwing for 300 yards, but just enough to where it's going to scare teams to where they go, okay, we can't put eight guys in the box to stop the run game because Lamar can gash us with the pass game. And they helped him out there with getting a few weapons in Hollywood Brown and Miles Boykin in the draft at the wide receiver position.
I got a quick game for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Lamar Jackson, he's 22 years old. I'm gonna see if he is older. I'm going to quiz you on if he is older or some of these recent draft picks that we just saw a couple months ago.
Okay.
So who's older? Lamar Jackson or Auburn quarterback Jarrett Stidham, who was just drafted this past year?
I'm going to say Jarrett Stidham.
5 months older is Jarrett Stidham.
Okay,
correct.
Yeah.
How about West Virginia quarterback Will Grier, who was drafted?
Well, Will Grier, transferred from Florida, so I'm going to say he's older as well.
2 years older.
Two
years older.
Holy cow, he's 24 already?
Ryan Finley, who was at NC State. Just drafted this past year.
Oh, I feel like he's younger and you're throwing me a curveball here and I have no idea. I just was guessing.
Ryan Finley is 2 years older than Lamar Jackson.
Damn, he's 2 years older too. So these are good. Who
your
else?
Your boy Drew Locke.
Yeah.
Denver Broncos just took him in the second round.
I'm going to say, what is he, a year older?
Drew Lock is 2 months older than Lamar Jackson.
Oh, okay.
So a little
Drew's
closer
a little
right
younger
there.
For his, okay, okay.
And finally, Daniel Jones.
Daniel Jones is 2 years older.
4 months younger.
4 months younger.
Then, yeah, he's actually younger than Lamar Jackson. But it just goes to show, it's like when you compare him as a guy who is 22 years old and doing what he did and already won six games where he started seven and a playoff game where he didn't play too bad and kept them in the game.
Yeah.
It's just like, wow, he did that all as a 22-year-old who's still got room to grow.
Definitely has room to grow. And, I mean, again, I'm rooting for him. I just, you know, again, I think the reason I don't have him rated higher, because I think if you looked at 6-1, went to the playoffs, you know, as a rookie, all good. I get it. But I just got to see more in the passing game first before I can put him there. You know, like I said, I don't know if there's another team he could have played like that for last year where they still could have won games. I mean, the Ravens were one of the best defenses in football. It's one of the biggest, most overpowering offensive lines in all of football.
Right.
They know how to manage the game that way to win those ugly type of games to go along with it. So I'm just hoping Lamar fixes some of those issues. He has some true mechanical flaws. And that's what has to be fixed. I talked about some of the things he does that are so effortless and look good, but does not keep a great base about him when he drops back to pass in the pocket. You know, you got to keep your feet wide so you're in a throwing position. He lets his feet get real narrow. Also doesn't really step into throws a lot of the times. The step is like 5 or 6 inches. And I'm going to go, how do you expect to get power on the ball that way?
And people hear you say that, and they go, okay, well, just fix it. But sometimes it's not that easy.
It's not that easy.
Sometimes players cannot fix it.
And he's an enigma. Nobody knows who was coaching him in the pre-draft process. You know, this year there's talk, oh, he went down to Florida to work with the guy that works with his quarterback. Nobody knows who the guy is.
Yeah.
I don't know who he's working with. And from everything, if this is the same guy that was working with him before the combine, he ain't telling him the right things. So he needs to change the guy. I can just tell you that much. Because he locks out his front leg, too, as he throws. When you lock out your front leg, that usually makes the upper body kind of flinch forward or lean forward. It goes to some worm burners. Worm burners are balls that skip on the ground, okay?
Yeah.
There's too many of those. And those are things he's going to have to clean up.
Number 29, it's time to move on. Talk about another guy who's got a lot of potential, was drafted higher than Lamar Jackson was coming out of college. Number 29 on the Chris Sims Top 40 Countdown is
Marcus Mariota.
Marcus Mariota.
Yes, Marcus Mariota. Listen, a lot of the same questions I think we have Lamar Jackson we got with Marcus Mariota.
It does seem, yeah,
right?
Similar.
I mean, it's very similar. It's, you know, my first thing with Marcus Mariota, you know, there's moments where I go, wow, let's just think of the New England Patriots game last year. All the big-time throws he made down the field. The Philadelphia Eagles game where they won in overtime at home. Another phenomenal showing. But I think the big thing is it's too few and far between with, you know, good passing games in the NFL. And I understand he hasn't had the greatest talent around him, but it's not always about just the numbers and the talent around him. It's what I see on a weekly basis of, you know, missed throws that should be slam dunk completions for an NFL quarterback where, yeah, 1 week he's throwing dimes all over the field. The next week I go, damn, there's somebody wide open 10 feet in front of him, and he threw it 5 feet over his head. How does that happen? You know, so it's those type of things. I always go back to this with Marcus Mariota. I always say he's an athlete who plays quarterback instead of a quarterback who's an athlete. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, sure.
When I say that? You know, yeah, I think he's like a really good athlete, and they were like, oh, let's play him a quarterback because he's got a strong arm and he can run fast. Yeah, okay, that's great. But, you know, he misses some of the intuition or natural things that quarterbacks have sometimes who are really natural at the position. Do not think he has great pocket presence. He, unlike Lamar Jackson, cannot throw the ball from different arm angles, drop it down, throw it sideways, things like that. You know, injuries are a little bit of concern. And the big thing is turnovers. Marcus Mariota has been extremely careless with the football throughout his career. He's got 30 fumbles in 4 years. You know, interception rate's not all that good. So a lot like Lamar Jackson, I got to see more consistency in the pass game. And obviously, so do the Tennessee Titans, or they would have signed him to a long-term deal. This is kind of a one-year,
and apparently,
option.
Yeah, his final season of the rookie contract reportedly hasn't even been offered a long-term extension throughout the time. Now, they have beefed up the wide receiving core around him. You know, they got Corey Davis a couple years ago. They brought in Adam Humphries this year.
Okay.
Who, it was interesting. I don't know if you saw that recent report where he said he picked the Titans over the Patriots because Tom Brady is old and you don't know how long he's going to be there anymore if you're going to sign a four-year deal.
Right.
But that was, I mean, it's not untrue.
No, it's not untrue. I mean, I know people found it unusual. I think it's a valid question. I mean, you're telling me if New England goes and wins the Super Bowl this year and Tom Brady's the Super Bowl MVP and he's won 7 Super Bowls, you're guaranteeing he's coming back for 2 more years after this?
Yeah.
Or, excuse me, 3 more. No, that's not. He made a wise decision, let alone Julian Edelman's there. No receivers ever really get off stat-wise. He
that
wants to
true.
Sign a next contract. He's not going to get great stats to be able to bargain to get a next great contract. People got to forget, you know, the Brady thing wasn't the only thing, but that was one smart point, I think, that you have to make in as far as evaluating the situation.
It struck me as one of those where I think the Titans were on him early and he'd already made up his mind he wanted to go there.
Yes.
And then the Patriots came late, and then you go, I'm going to stick with the Titans, and you're trying to kind of justify it maybe later after the fact, you know. It's like, how long is Brady even going to be there?
Sure.
But certainly, I mean, you can't knock him for thinking it. They drafted, did the Titans, A.J. Brown out of Ole Miss in the second round. So
they
Marcus,
got some help around him.
He does have some help this
yes,
year,
he
maybe
does.
Maybe more than he has in the past. So I looked through the last 10 quarterbacks who were taken 1 or 2 in the draft.
Yeah.
And how many you would take ahead of Marcus Mariota.
Yep.
I mean, this is basically your countdown list, but you know, Cam Newton, you'd take ahead of him.
Yes, I would.
Robert Griffin, close,
no,
not necessarily.
No, I think Robert Griffin has a higher ceiling as a quarterback than Marcus Mariota, but at this point, no, I'm not going to put him in front of Mariota.
Andrew Luck,
without question.
Jameis Winston.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we haven't talked about him yet.
Carson Wentz, we haven't talked about yet. So, he's ahead. Jared Goff, Mitch Trubisky, ahead. Baker Mayfield, ahead. Yep. Kyler Murray, ahead.
The big thing with all these guys you're saying is they're just better, pure passers, throwers, whatever word you want to use for it at the quarter. Yeah. They all have an advantage over Marcus Mariota that way, and that's really the big thing.
Let me go back to 2007 then. Jamarcus Russell.
He got him. For sure, no doubt about it.
Okay.
You know,
so
hey, Mariota, you got to take the injury history into account, you know. Hey, it's very close between him and Ryan Tannehill. I mean, Ryan Tannehill is his backup. It's, you know, I ranked him.
Well, that's another thing, too. Yeah, right.
Right. I mean he's similar skill set.
So if you were just to guess right now, who is the starter come week, I would say, 12?
Yeah.
You know, we're second half of the season going to the stretch run. Who would you put your money on, Marcus Mariota or Ryan Tannehill?
Right. They're both injury-plagued that way. I think right now, though, I mean, for the year that it's such a big year for the Tennessee Titans, they got weapons around them. There's been a lot of talk about Mariota's put on extra weight to be able to take the pounding of the season. Maybe he'll play a little bit of a different style this year. I'm going to put my money that Mariota's going to be the guy this year.
Okay.
I do.
I do think it's interesting, too, because some people say, the Titans, they should have gone a different direction or taken a different quarterback. I also looked at the quarterbacks.
There was nobody else to take, right?
The quarterbacks taken after Marcus Mariota were Garrett Grayson,
right.
Sean Mannion,
right.
Bryce Petty.
Oh, Garrett Grayson, you mean the guy that was supposed to follow up Drew Brees and take over the organization?
Correct.
Where is
he
now?
That didn't happen.
Oh, it didn't happen. That's right. Because third rounders don't get drafted to take over organizations. Thank you.
Bryce Petty, Brett Hundley, and Trevor Siemian. Those were all. That was it. That
there
was the other quarterbacks drafted after Marcus Mariota went number 2. So it's a tough situation if you're the Titans. You know you need a franchise quarterback.
Yes.
Could you have gotten something, another piece somewhere else? Of course, but...
The potential is why you had to take him there. He not only was awesome in college and was great and won a lot of games, but, you know, you had to look at the player and go, okay, if everything comes together, he can be special. And I still believe that. It just hasn't come together yet. So he's going to have to show me before I put him in my top 20 or top 15 or top 10 for that matter.
Yeah, Marcus Mariota, number 29 on the list. You know who I would like to get their insight on Marcus Mariota being number 29?
Yeah.
Your dad. Big
fail.
We got him on the phone.
Yeah, hey, Dad, what's up, man?
Hey, Christopher and Ahmed, how are you?
Good.
Did you listen to his radio show by chance this morning, Ahmed?
The PFT?
No.
No.
Yes, that's what he's talking about.
I want to tell my son this. Listen, don't sing on TV anymore. Okay.
Yeah.
You know,
but Mike
I was
did
in the
too.
Choir
Mike sang
up.
Too.
I could sing. You can't. He was singing all one of the fight songs.
Yeah, we did. You know, football. Songs playing. Yeah. So I thought I nailed it. I thought I hit it out of the park today.
Well, I know. You know, perception and reality. That's what it is.
Two different things.
It sounds so much better in the IFB when you're hearing it in the headphones. It sounds so much better.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Marcus Mariota, you keep saying if this and that and bing and boom and all that, he'll be special. You ranked him at what, number 29 today?
Yeah, 29. Yep, exactly right.
Okay. You know, the only thing, the biggest thing that would worry me about him,
right?
Can he make special throws?
Yeah.
Yes or no?
Right.
Yes or no?
I mean, right now,
no.
I would say no. Yes.
No.
Right.
And what? Why is it going to change? Is his arm? You know, he's a very. You said it right. Compact.
Mechanical kind of
or whatever.
Right.
So he's not going to make. And you know that's the thing about statistics that get lost in the NFL. Because, you know, we look at all completion percentage, their ratings and all that crap. But we don't give anything special to the guys that just make these incredible throws down the field because they have great arms and it's a tight window, but they see it as wide open. And
right.
They make the throw. And sometimes it gets intercepted. But a lot of times those are the throws that win games.
Right.
And every game comes down to me. You look at the winning team and the quarterback. It's going to have three or four throws. You go, wow,
right.
That was a big play. And his arm was the difference in making that play and helping us win today.
Yeah,
so there you go.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, you're right. No, and those are some of the things I just hit on because we saw it last year in the Patriots game, right? That was one of the few games of his career where I went, ooh, he made some difference making type of throws in that football game. But really, it's the only game I can speak to of that caliber to this point. Nor, you know, Dad, he can't, you know, I've never seen him do it. Every throw is the same. You know,
that's what I mean. That's what I said.
Yeah,
that's a great way of saying it.
Every throw
is
the same.
He's got a way to throw. It's nice. He throws spirals, but it's not powerful. So when you talk about that Patriots game, yes, he can throw great touch passes, all that. You could win with a Super Bowl. Not say, it doesn't matter. As far, I mean, you get the right team.
Right.
A lot of quarterbacks can win the Super Bowl, but you know, difference makers. And you're right; never changes. Can't really make the great off balance throws that I think are a necessity in today's game. Not only in the pros, but even in college and even in good high school, really competitive leagues. You know, you got quarterbacks that can make all these off balance throws, and it's just a big part of the game now.
Yeah, no question. All right, so
let's go.
Yeah, all right, let's go.
So we'll get back to the list. We got one more to reveal on the top 40 list.
We'll get to that after Dad.
After Dad, we'll get to that.
Yeah. But Dad, I mean, one thing I know you and I are both interested in talking about, the 18-game season in the NFL. Been a lot of talk about it. Lately, it seems like Roger Goodell is kind of setting it up that way. I don't know if you saw his comments that he made yesterday in Buffalo about, you know, shortening the preseason. I think we all know if he's talking about shortening the preseason, they're not just going to go, oh, we're going to take two games away and that's it. Don't worry about us. Yeah, of course, there's another part of that plan, which is going to be add two regular season games.
Yeah.
Is 18 games doable? Do you think players will want it? Would you want to do it?
Would I want to do it? Yes. Why would I want to do it?
Yeah.
You didn't talk about this morning. Why would you want to do it?
I would think that it's going to be a bigger salary cap, more money.
More money.
Right.
Two more game checks.
Right.
You know, just prorate it. Give me two more game checks. And if you put it up to a vote, guys, by the NFL players, it'll overwhelmingly go over and say yes. Yes, some of the elite quarterbacks and a few players, no. Well, yeah, you're making 25 and 30 million, but the guys that are making, you know, a million or less or even two more game checks, what are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Think about what those checks look like.
Right.
And how much that is and how much of a difference it makes in their life. So the players probably won't have much say in it. It'll be a select few players with their, you know, the committee and the, oh, come on, D'Amore Smith.
Oh, yeah, the NFL player
union.
Yeah, it'll be a few players, but if you put it up to vote, there is no doubt the players would vote to go 18 games. I do think it's heading that way. Mm. And just think what the owners get into all this. Two more weeks of TV money.
Right.
TV would want it to, just because it's the greatest thing on every network. And I never thought it would come about, but I agree with a lot of what you guys said this morning, that the preseason games, Christopher, you said it. Last year, you know I love watching preseason games.
It was the worst ever, right?
It was awful.
It really was, yeah.
I mean,
nobody played.
Here's what was awful about it. Two things. One, nobody was playing.
Right.
But two, you know, you've got all these young guys on the offensive side, and they're trying to do their thing. And you know, like you say, there's a couple guys that can make a team, and then the defense is over there. You know, the defensive coordinator doesn't care. All these guys ain't going to make the team. Let's just blitz them all.
Right.
And, of course, the offensive guys get very few reps in practice, and the games are just total disasters in my eyes. And I probably watched less preseason football last year than I ever have. And there are some years I watch almost every one of the games because I – just want to see the guys and kind of get a feel. And but it's on its way out. There's no question. This 18-game schedule definitely will be part and will be, I think, part of the NFL when the new collective bargaining agreement comes around.
Wouldn't the NFL and the owners would try to make the case that the players have already been paid? They've been paid for four preseason games. I don't know the exact structure and the 16-game
schedule. Preseason, everybody gets the same. So really, owners like preseason. And Dad can correct me if I'm wrong here. Preseason is also a great moneymaker for the owners because you're not paying Tom Brady his $2 million game check. You're paying everybody $1,000, but yet everybody's still coming to the stadium. The stadium's sold out.
Right.
Yeah,
doesn't matter if they show up or not.
The parking, it's already paid for, right, whether the fans are there or not. The parking, the concessions from the stands, and now you're not giving out your big weekly salary to your star football players, sure, where it's big money in the owner's pockets, but two extra games on TV and the legal gambling era, I think, is going to be more than those two preseason games, and that's where they're trying to get to that.
You do hear a lot of chatter about players. Obviously, about the safety, right? We've talked about player safety for the past decade now, it seems like, and you add two more games where you're replacing two preseason games where starters may not play at all with two games where you tack those on.
Yeah, do you worry about that, Dad? I worry about the playoffs, and people are banged up, and teams aren't the same, and I guess that's one of my worries.
Now, you know what? Here's what I would say to that. I think, I don't know the numbers. I just go by when I played and what I watch now. And, Bill Cowher laughed at it last year. We laughed about this. When you watch week one to week four or five, watch a game there, and if you play that same team during a division in week 13 and you go back and look at the game in week 13, you look at game five's game, you go, oh, my God, have we slowed down. Mm-hmm. And the league slows down just all year long.
Right.
The players, fatigue, just everything that's involved with it. So, to me, I always thought, man, if I can make it through the first four games, I'll be all right. Because those first four, everybody's at top speed, physically, mentally, everything, and they are absolutely brutal. Not only that, you're trying to really get used to playing a whole game and taking all the hits that you might not get enough of those hits during preseason. So that doesn't worry me at all, and I don't think the players will take that in. Like I said again, they don't care. Give me that money, baby, and that's what it's going to come down to. That's what I think. And my last thing, I even told – Matt, I told my son this, that I went to practices a few years ago when it was kind of really starting to rise, this 18-game schedule.
Right.
And I was really speaking out against it on Showtime and everywhere.
Yeah.
And I had owners come up to me at practice and go, why do you hate us so much? And I'm like, whoa. I'm like, right up, what do you mean? Well, you don't want 18 games. Why are you so against it? And I just go, well, I'm just against it for the players.
Right.
Well, and they were taking it personal, and it just tells you it's a gold mine right now for everybody, really.
Yeah.
The players, the networks, owners. I mean, it's going to work for all. And the extra two games and talking about the physical well-being of the players. I don't think it's what we think it is.
Okay. All right. So now, off of that, I mean, I know you hear this. I hear this. Teams talking about, it's so hard to get our teams ready by the start of the regular season. With the way the offseason is scheduled, the training camp rules, all of that thing. You have two less preseason games, Dad. Do you think that something has to change? Is there another way? I mean, do we add more practices? Is the union going to say, okay, then maybe we need to have a few more padded practices? Something has to be made up for that experience, don't you think?
Yes. Oh, yeah. What you do is you just have more controlled inter-squad scrimmages. You know, get together for 3 days, control the environment as much as you can.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be all-out tackling and everything like that. You said you made great points this morning. It saves the players, but it's more beneficial. You know, you don't waste time on the field. I used to love it when we practiced against other teams because it was so easy.
Right.
You said it. Now we're not doing stuff for the defense. We're only doing stuff for us.
Right.
And I think you'd see more of that. And you know what they would do? They would hold them in their stadiums and let the fans come and watch or whatever. And you get a little more of that atmosphere to maybe judge players against other teams,
yes,
just like preseason games, and the injury risk and all the things that we talk about. Yeah, you're still going to have injuries, but you have more control of what's going on than you would just during a regular game like a preseason game.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the wave of the future. There are two preseason games and a lot of team scrimmages,
right,
and you're going to have fans have to go to the training camp facilities or whatever it may be, and that's going to kind of get their fill of preseason football is to be able to watch those scrimmages.
Well, you know, so many things, and you know, listen, and you asked me this morning, did we have how many mini camps? We have one mini camp every off season,
right,
3 days.
Right.
The first day we would practice twice. The next day we would go out there and we'd practice once, and Parcells would just go, oh. We'd have a meeting before the second. He goes, all right, we're going to practice today and tomorrow. We're not doing it. It's a waste of time. And just go, because, you know, we couldn't hit, you couldn't do this and all that. So he just said, just run and lift those damn weights and I'll see you at training camp and we'll get this stuff, you know, figured out.
Let's talk about that. Because we talked about it a little before we started. We've had this conversation a lot, and I, because we're in the era now of, OTAs, mini camps, another mini camp, more OTAs. And we're seeing more off-season injuries than ever before. And, again, I got to go back and look up the numbers of Dad's Day and Dad's Era. But Dad will tell you I was pretty obsessed with the sport at a pretty young age, and I think Dad would tell you I just don't remember players getting hurt as much as they do now in the off-season now as compared to then when all you were doing was training. I mean, what do you think about that? What do you think of the current status of how the off-season is structured for players and everything?
Well, it'll never go back to where you can go back to the certain days. And, you know, the players come up there, and all of a sudden, no matter what, you know, when you're not training for football or doing football stuff, that's going to be a difference. Then they go out in the field, and you said it. They go out in the field. You can't have pads on, and it's offense against defense, and everybody is going way too fast,
right,
out of control, trying to show, you know, and all those things, show up and do well. And that causes injuries. And I'm sure half the practice, the coaches are going, oh, now, careful, slow down. You know, it's because it's too much. I would see it as you've got to bring them there during the off season, teach them, and all that, and really just go out and work more on individuals.
Right.
Try to put team stuff together. Is just, I don't understand. It's,
you're flirting
with
danger.
You know, Christopher, let me say this.
Yeah.
All the great thoughts in preseason that you have, and sometimes in training camp, oh, we're going to do this, it's going to be new. Then game one comes around, you go, wow, that was a waste of time. Let's go back to what we did and this. It's just, and my son was in Tampa. I'll bet you he ran 500 plays that were new during the off season, and they didn't use any of them during the season.
It was just to occupy the brain when everyone's bored, when it's the non-football months. And so what did you feel like as a player? Like, what was the bare minimum that you felt like you needed to do that you were ready? And obviously it's going to be a little different for quarterback than maybe running back or defensive lineman, but what is required and what is just kind of like extra work on top of that?
Well, listen, you mean what I needed in preseason games? I needed to play. I needed to go out in the field and stand there, get in the huddle, do all that, throw, take some hits, make some throws, kind of see the speed and have the fans there.
Right.
And, you know, listen, I always remember, you know, we played our preseason games for most of the part were really, like, real all the time.
Right.
And, you know, there were, I don't know how many years of my career, the fourth preseason game, I would play almost entirely the whole game. Mm. And most of the time, I would play the whole game. And it was 80,000 people in the stadium because we were always playing the Jets the fourth, you know, preseason game. And it was, like, crazy, and it was real, and it was over. You go, wow. But I needed time just to be out there. And that fourth game, when it came about where we weren't playing as much, Parcells, how much you want to play, and I said, I want to play one or two series. I don't care if we run on every play. I just want to take the snap, hand it off, and look at the defense and be able to focus where everybody's lined up and not be going into the first game going, wow, this really looks different from what I've been practicing with. So
yeah,
it was a different era.
Yeah.
Practices were long, day, two days.
Did you find that, you know, okay, so you had 21 straight weeks of off-season training, then you got, what, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and you had a break between training camp. Were you guys using the start of training camp to get back into shape? I mean, I don't know. When I was growing up and you were playing, I felt like the third day of practice, you guys were at a full team scrimmage already and gonna hit each other. So, you know, why is it that we see these guys getting hurt, but yet in your day, it's, you know, all you did was train and then you put on the pads and nobody got hurt ever?
Two things, lots of things. One, they are faster. And but it's not like, oh my God, they're so much faster now. Because I just watched some films of back in the 88 or whatever of a couple teams the other day. It was on TV and I go, man, everybody looks pretty big and fast to me there too.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
That's. You know, that's one thing. And what was your question, though? The original question.
Did you find that guys were using training camp to get back into shape?
Oh no, yeah. No. Listen, that's the thing. There's so much time off in everything, and there's no way guys are going to leave here this week or next week and go home and train to the degree that. I know they didn't do it like we did. We would do 21 or 22 straight weeks during the off season of 4 days a week of speed running to start the workout, lift the weights, and conditioning running.
Right.
And no exaggeration, the first day of the off season program, the very first day, little speed work, lift the weights. And you know what our running was?
What?
Everybody on the team was doing it. 10 440s for time.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, just think of that now.
Man.
10 440s for time.
Yeah.
You get a little rest between the first five. You know, you do five. There was a formula how much rest. Then you'd get a five-minute break. Then you run five more. And, I mean, you know, that was week one. And the times kept getting lower and lower. And then I was, oh, we're going to run 3:30s. Oh, that's great. Oh, my God, we're going to have to sprint them to make the time. And so we did 21 to 22 weeks of that. And if training camp opened on a Sunday, we would train to Wednesday or Thursday before that. Okay, now, going to give you a couple of days off, rest up, and then you go to training camp. And
that
do
was
some
Johnny
unbelievable,
Parker, his training coach.
Yeah, you do some unbelievable,
run test
right. Before the first practice. You go, my gosh. You know, 6 220s, I had to run them. I can remember it. I had to run 220s under 27 or 28 seconds.
Oof.
Now, that was the last ones we did. Now, come on.
Yeah.
I had to be
phenomenal.
Full sprinting. You know, defensive backs and the wide receivers, that's a little easier. But for the quarterbacks, my gosh, that we were crossing that line every time just making it. And if you didn't make it, then, you know, the punishment came afterwards.
So we're having longer periods of sustained training in Dad's era, which, I mean, again, this is something that, you know, I've talked about this.
With science.
With science, right. We know that it takes six consecutive weeks of heavy, you know, training to strengthen muscles and ligaments to get your body healthy. We're missing that this day and age right now.
You don't think players are doing that? You don't think players are doing that on
the That's where I want to go with this. So this is where this is the next phase of this conversation, because when I tell people this a lot of the times, they go, whoa, come on. These players all got their personal trainers now. They're in better shape than ever. And Dad's laughing because we're not going to name names here, but we have seen a few star players over the last few years work out at a gym that we go to in New Jersey, Parisi's. And, they come in with their private trainer. And, you know, we look over there, and it's hour one of the workout, and, man, there's not even a sweat breaking over there yet.
That's right.
And then it's hour two of the workout, and there's not really a sweat breaking out yet. And, you know, the training is not as rigorous as everybody wants to think it's going to be.
Right.
When you're employing the guy to train you, ultimately he's going to listen to what you want to do training because you're paying him the fucking money.
Here it is. You know, I'm a little, don't want to train too hard. I want to preserve and rest. And today is not the day. I don't want to do this.
Right.
Instead, I know groups of guys – that I watch train, and like you said, this facility, I see the group that comes in with their trainer. They're there 2 hours, and nobody sweats, and I laugh. And then there's another group of 8 or 10 guys that come in that are now have no say in what we're going to do today.
Right.
And they just go, what is it? And they do it, and you know, I'm not, like, again, I don't want to name names, but every one of them goes to their off-season programs, to the training camps, and they are the best in-shape guys on their team
right.
to play football. And, you know, a lot of teams give out these off-season awards, the guys in the best shape, and those guys, it was incredible how many of them would win the award. Oh, the best in-shape guy or, you know, whatever, all that stuff. They give out little awards, some teams do.
Right.
And they would win it. And I go, wow, what a shock. Of course you did.
Yeah.
Who in the hell's training as hard as you guys are to get ready for football? And, you know, not only that, it showed in their play, all these guys, some of them fringe, made football teams, and the ones that were frontline starters, but most of the time always had good years.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, that's very relatable. I mean, as someone who is not a professional athlete, to know that even the ones that are really, really good at it and in super shape and can be in super shape still don't want
well,
to work
it's
out.
Good. And they're going to they're gonna look good when they walk into the first day of off season. Everyone's going, oh, look at your arms.
Yeah.
look at his chest.
Right.
Right. None of those really help with football, your arms or your chest, okay?
And now you pulled a muscle.
Well, and now you pulled a muscle because of what Dad is saying. Football shape is a different thing, you know? Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, it's been great. I've been working with my trainer, but now I'm Nick Bosa, and I put my hand in the ground, and it's my first day practicing for the 49ers, and Joe Staley's across from me. I'm going to give more than go. I'm going to give my all-time effort here to impress my teammates, myself, my coaches, everything. Oh, man, it popped. Well, why'd it pop? Well, you're not in shape yet. You're not ready. You're not ready to do that quite of an explosive movement yet. And, yeah, your arms look good and everything else, but, you know, you're not made to play football yet. I don't know.
You know, the good thing you're saying is that's why I think with the OTAs and all that, I know they do some lifting and running a little bit in all these off-season programs, but it is nothing like they really need to do or whatever. And so, you know, that causes some problems. And I would use those off-season programs. I hear some of the teams are doing more. They're doing a little more conditioning, more individual work. That way they make sure nobody gets hurt. You know, throwers, you go out and throw some. You know, we did that on our own.
Right.
You know, our coaches, and I know it's a long time ago, and I hate to even talk about it, but our coaches, Bill Parcells, would tell the coaches, leave them alone. Don't talk to them.
Right.
He wouldn't even let them talk to us. And he sure wouldn't let them go on the field and work with us. Leave them alone, let them get in shape, and we'll take care of all this crap when we go to training camp. Because training camp was longer, more physical, more practices, and they could accomplish more, of course, because of all those things.
All right, you the man, Dad. I appreciate it. And to your point, what you're saying, that's the way New England does their OTAs for everybody out there.
Many things, they do it. New England trains, they condition all through the year.
Yes, they do.
They're running their players their week off before the Super Bowl.
Right.
I don't know if they did this year, but last year they were running gassers.
Yes.
Wow.
They practice for real.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, that's okay. It's real. I always tell many coaches, they always would ask me, and I've said this many times to you guys, I go, New England, without question, and there were some that were close, but not many, holds the best practices I've watched over that 20, I don't know how many years I would announce, to 18, 20 years, whatever.
Yeah.
They were always the best practices. And I just would go, you know, I'd watch them sometimes in practice. I go, man, if I could bet on games, I know who I'd bet on tomorrow, you know, or Sunday.
Right.
Because it was that obvious what they were doing. The scheme of what they were doing was going to get the other team, so it's pretty cool to watch.
Yep. All right, Dad.
You guys have a great day.
Good combo, man.
All right,
see ya. Be good.
Go figure. Whatever the Patriots are doing, that's a good thing to do, and other teams probably should look at that.
WWBD. I think every team needs to go, what would Belichick do constantly?
So we got one more now.
One
more before we wrap up here on Unbuttoned on your top 40 quarterbacks list.
Yep.
And this is newly revealed, has not been released anywhere before.
I only hear on Unbuttoned.
Not even to Florio. You kept this one for us.
Yep.
And number 28 on your list is
Case Keenum.
Case Keenum.
Washington. Washington Redskins. Yes, Case Keenum, the career journeyman. You know, the guy that I'll say right off the bat doesn't really get the credit he deserves for the talent he has. Yeah. You know, I think a little bit people just look at him, oh, he's Case Keenum. He's Case Keenum.
Undrafted free agent out of Houston.
Right. And I feel like never been able to get rid of that stigma a little bit. But one thing is this. Stronger arm than people realize. I've seen him in person, and of course I watch everything on film. But when I saw him in person, it jumped out to me even more. Just in pregame warmups, I remember watching Case Keenum go, "Damn, ball pops out of his hand. That's pretty quick release. Can really spin it. Do those things." So he's got a bigger arm than people give him credit for. He's a good athlete too. I mean, he's showed it really, especially 2 years ago, and showed it last year with the Denver Broncos too, that he is capable of escaping the pocket, making throws, extending plays that way, scrambling for first downs. I know last year wasn't perfect with the Denver Broncos. I think there was a lot of good. I don't think it was a great team around him. I don't think it was a great offensive line. Yeah. Not necessarily one of the best running games. But Case Keenum, he could have set himself up to be higher in this ranking if it weren't for last year a little bit. You know, coming off of 22 touchdowns and 7 interceptions and being in the NFC Championship game for the Minnesota Vikings.
That 2017 year was special.
It was special. I mean, he did a lot of great things that year, too. And, of course, he had a team around him. But most good quarterbacks do, or most good teams do. I mean, that's part of it. And he took advantage of that. But it wasn't just system football always. Case Keenum, go back and look at that year. He made some plays, like some plays that there was nothing there to be had. And his arm or his ability to dance around the pocket and make something happen made the offense go in certain situations. And I put value to that. So I think he's a little underappreciated.
Sure.
I do look at it that way. And last year, just if there was more negative about last year, I think he misevaluated his own team to a degree. You know, I think there were some games where he should have just gone, you know what, we're going to have to win this one 19-16 this week. And instead he was kind of playing a style of football like, oh, I got to score 35. And he was a little careless with the football in some games that were tight. And, maybe they could have won a close one. And he made a few bad decisions at the end of the first half or whatever it may be to put them in a tough spot to have to play a style of football that they weren't built to play for.
Sure.
So I like Case Keenum. It'll be interesting to see whether he can hold off Dwayne Haskins this year.
Well, that's the story out of there. You got Dwayne Haskins, you got Colt McCoy, and you got Case Keenum.
Right.
And, you figure, I don't know if you keep all three of them. I mean, it seems like you might want to deal one of those for a different piece.
No doubt.
You don't need
Colt McCoy would be the guy I would look at to go, that could be the odd guy out if he shows he's healthy. Yeah, well, Case Keenum, a little more of a proven commodity.
Yeah.
Of course, has played more than Colt McCoy the last year. Doesn't have the injury history.
This preseason be kind of a battle between Colt McCoy and Case Keenum? One of those guys gets shipped out?
I think so. I mean, I think either, very rare to keep three guys on the quarterback position on the active roster, right, this day and age. You know, the other thing, if they all played really well, I think Colt McCoy could be trade bait for a team that maybe goes, man, we don't have a good backup.
That would make more sense because it's strange to sign a guy like Case Keenum in the offseason than trade him before he even started.
Yeah, that's why I don't think so. I don't think so either, right? They're a little more invested that way into him. But they have a good problem to have. And again, Case Keenum, I think he's a guy that in Washington, a system that fits him, the West Coast offense, I think that'll be good for him. But the Redskins, if they can stay healthy, their O-line's pretty good. The receivers got some, unproven commodities.
Right.
I would not be shocked if we were sitting here week 10, you and I, and we're going, hey, guess what? The Redskins are pretty good, and Case Keenum's playing pretty good. And I'm going to go, because Case Keenum's pretty good. He's not, like, a superstar. I don't think he's ever going to be one of the 10 best quarterbacks in football. But I think when he really reaches his ceiling and plays at his absolute best, he is one of the 20 best quarterbacks in football if he put together like a great year.
It will be fascinating to see how Dwayne Haskins incorporates with Colt McCoy and with Case Keenum. And we may be able to see it because Washington is one of those five teams that cannot say no
to Hard Knocks.
To Hard Knocks from HBO, which we have. Normally we know by now.
I didn't realize we were so late. I know. I didn't realize it.
We should find out in the next couple
of
weeks.
Nobody wants to do it, apparently.
No one ever wants to do it.
No, you're right. Nobody ever wants to do it.
But there are five teams that can't say no, and those are this year Washington, the Raiders, Giants, Lions, and 49ers. Now, there are reports that the 49ers apparently are not doing it.
Well,
I don't know if you have inside information there. I
have no inside information. All I know is the NFL is absolutely insane if they don't pick the Oakland Raiders.
Yes.
I cannot think of a
team
really in modern history that's more suited for the show and would make me, a guy who does not turn it onto the show,
I don't turn it on consistently.
I mean, first of all, I've been to enough training camps, and I know what's being said, and I'm just not that intrigued by all of it all the time. But, damn, the Oakland Raiders, even for a guy like me, would be one where I'd be like, okay, let me see what Psycho John is telling Derek Carr today.
And Antonio Brown.
Exactly
Vontaze
right.
Perfect. Richie Incognito.
Right.
Last season in Oakland. I mean,
Mayock.
How do you not?
Exactly
how do you
right.
Not
to
pick?
Me, it's a no-brainer.
So when you were a player, would you have enjoyed that? Would you think you would have liked to have the cameras infiltrate your training camp?
It wouldn't bother me. I don't think I would ever be annoyed by it. I'm sure there'd be moments where I'd get in the meeting room after a long day and be like, oh my gosh, this fucking camera guy wants to mic me up. Like, fuck off, dude. Like, I'm sick of you. Would there be moments like that? Definitely.
But you got to be careful, too, because you can't, as in the locker room, you can't be almost too eager to be that guy, right? I don't know if it's the same way. I know in baseball, certainly, that is. You can't be the guy that's too eager to be in front of the camera.
Yeah, you can't be too thirsty for the attention.
Right.
Yeah, you're a little too thirsty for the attention. You're going to get called out for sure. You don't want to be the guy, you don't want to be the guy, who was that? Like Chris Hogan when he was with the Miami Dolphins and... who am I missing? It was playing the guitar back in the day and singing songs. It was so embarrassing. So don't be that guy.
You ramped it up too much. But it is good. I mean, it's good for you and your brand to be part of it and in a positive light. It's normally very positive, too.
It is usually very positive.
I mean, that's what they have to do or else they just wouldn't ever get to do it anymore. Very positive, and so I think you're right. Over Washington and Case Keenum.
Yep.
Even though they got Josh Norman, Landon Collins now over there in Washington, Dan Snyder's always kind of an interesting character.
Yep. No, I the Redskins got potential. They do. They're one of those teams, really, the last 2 years are going to skew a lot of our thoughts. And the only thing I would say to people, and I understand the proof's in the pudding ultimately at the end of the day, but go back and look at the injuries the last 2 years the Washington Redskins have. They've been ravaged. I mean, the amount of – I think they had to use 20-something different offensive line combinations last year to make it through the year. I mean, 20-something, that's unbelievable. The year before, it wasn't far behind that either. So they've had to deal with the injury bug. Hopefully, they've fixed those type of things. I mean, here we are. Reuben Foster is already out for the year, so that stinks. But if they can stay healthy, I do think the guys we see on paper on their roster are pretty damn good, and I think they can be in that playoff conversation.
And perhaps Case Keenum, the number 28 quarterback on Chris Sims' top 40, could lead him to a playoff win. All right, we're up to 28 already.
It's flying.
We're flying.
I know.
Oof, all right, man. We'll do five more next time.
Please, like anybody, you want questions?
Oh, yeah, comment in on Twitter. Chris loves that when he gets heat on Twitter. If you don't agree with anything on the list, tweet about it.
Please
Chris
do. And I would like to answer these questions. I want to have healthy discussions. Again.
Oh, then don't do it on Twitter.
No, well, I know. But some of those questions today were good discussions.
One of them was.
Okay, one of them. All right, we can do a little hate, too. I get it. But thanks for listening to Chris Sims Unbuttoned. Always appreciate it. Ahmed, you the man, dude.
Well done.
Thanks a lot. If you want to check us out and see these beautiful faces, youtube.com/NBCSports. You know where to get me on Instagram, @SimsUnbuttoned. @CSimsQB Twitter. I've given up on Twitter. Just letting you know, I kind of tried to make it happen. I can't make it happen like I did.
I'm tweeting.
I'm going to get more. I'm going to try to answer more tweets during the podcast so I don't have to get frustrated with my thumbs. I think that's the better way.
I'll be the bad guy and ask you the
Thank
question.
You. I'll punch you. All right. Peace out, everybody. Have a good week. We'll talk to you Thursday.
I'm going to get a soda.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
If you went on a road trip and you didn't stop for a Big Mac or drop a crispy fry between the car seats or use your McDonald's bag as a placemat, then that wasn't a road trip. It was just a really long drive. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's.